Pittsburgh today.
Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this May the 22nd or May the 23rd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We have Memorial Day weekend upon us, and there's a lot to talk about. I was reading a really good article today. In fact, I posted it on my website at directlightproductions.com. Go over to Breaking News and look for a piece called War is a Racket. And you must read that. It's a really interesting piece. It's written by a late major general in the U.S. Marine Corps. And he had fought in a number of wars, won many medals, and actually talks about the kind of money that was made during certain wars throughout history. It's a very, very interesting piece, and it tells a story that you're not going to hear very often. If you were listening to last night's show, I think we dropped off something like three times during the broadcast. Now, what could cause that? Well, there was a lot of truth coming out, and it seems that when we are breaching some of these topics that are little known but very true, we have technical problems. Anyway, I was talking yesterday about the nature of our financial system from the time that Franklin Delano Roosevelt took over the presidency. Literally, from the early 1930s, you could even say from 1930, while this country was in a depression, it was being planned to take our gold away from all the citizens, and they had all kinds of penalties if you didn't turn your gold in, and people just did it, and they didn't even question why. You assume your government is doing the right thing, and yet Roosevelt was obviously on the path, well on the way to destroying this country with some of the things that he did. And I described the nature of the government in Washington, D.C. as one of public policy and always operating out of a state of bankruptcy. Although we're never told that. We're told, oh, the gross domestic product is this, and we have this much of a surplus, or we're just about this much behind here. These countries owe us money, and we're giving away money by the billions and billions and billions of dollars. In fact, some of the corruption that's occurred has earned others in the trillions. And some say, you know, if the Federal Reserve is upside down or in the red, some $3.3 quadrillion, somebody's in the black $3.3 quadrillion. And it'd be interesting to find out who exactly that is. But that said, last night's show was basically my reading a piece that was pretty down to earth and describing the whole situation. And how it's set up in the courts, because lawyers are involved in this. They don't tell you that the court is the banker. The judge is the banker. And they take all these monies from court proceedings, and they invest it in derivatives and hedge funds and trusts, which are illegal. And these are issues that have come up in my research. It's going on all the time, every day of the week in Chicago. And they take that money, they steal some identities, they create phony divorce records, phony CPS records, phony real estate transactions, and they flip properties in Maricopa County, Arizona, in the Phoenix area. And that money is also laundered into some banks in Utah. And this has been going on for such a long, long time prior to this mortgage collapse. I've been talking about this topic for 3 years. So I got into a lot of that, and with tonight's guest, we're going to sort of just ramble around. We'll be taking calls on the half hour if you're interested in joining in the conversation, or if you have a question for me or tonight's guest. He is a regular on Evident Footprints on Friday nights, and he's a resident science advisor. Why? Well, he's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. And I know of no one else that would make such a good guest week after week on this show and still bring something new to the table. Our good friend, Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. Had a very busy day today. Doing a lot of research, trying to catch up on what's out there in the media, especially the alternative media, and some interesting things going on. That said, yeah, I'm fine. Now,
well, I'm glad to hear that.
Okay.
I'm having a little bit of trouble here with this phone. Can you hear me okay?
Actually, there seems to be a bit of a delay, but we'll try to work through that. I'm sure Seth will straighten it out. Volume-wise, I can hear you, yeah. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay. All right. Well, we haven't really planned anything. I thought you might want to make a comment about what I was talking about, you know, this issue of the country being bankrupt and them not telling anyone about it. Since 1933.
Well, as certain people know, the country has been bankrupt since 1933, and according to international law, which governs the behavior of bankrupt corporations, and of course it's important at this point to interject the fact that there is a company called the United States, and this company or this corporation is literally the entity to which we elect a president when we vote. We do not elect a president to the republic. That's
yes.
Been out of vogue for quite some time. And so it's the corporation that's broke, not the United States of America, the country. And as a result of that, when a corporation is bankrupt as a result of international commerce and trade, there are restrictions placed upon it, whether it's in Chapter 13 or Chapter 7 or Chapter 11 or whatever the arrangement is. And so in reality, there has not been a bill paid in this country since 1933. And the stuff that we're passing around, this funny money, this fiat money, is essentially a bunch of worthless certificates that are produced at great cost to us as a nation, and which serve as a so-called medium of exchange, but which in fact are only promises to pay. And it says that right on every one of our bills. Mm-hmm. They are Federal Reserve notes. And you cannot pay a bill with a promise to pay, which is what a note is. And so we have been laboring for many, many years under the belief that all is well, when in reality all has not been well, and we've been lied to, stolen from, and cheated by the very officials that we elect to represent us and who are supposed to have the goodwill of the people and their welfare in mind, which, of course, they do not.
Yes. So. Now, you know, you mentioned the Federal Reserve. You know, there's nothing federal about it other than the name, and there is no reserve. And the fact
I'm aware.
Yeah, the fact that they're handing out notes or calling them notes tells you again that it's not money. This is all illusion, smoke and mirrors. And I also brought up the issue of the Uniform Commercial Code, and I know that has probably had some impact on science and inventions being released into the marketplace. Do you have any personal experience along those lines in respect to the Uniform Commercial Code?
Well, I have some personal experiences with the Uniform Commercial Code because there was a point where I had to actually learn a little bit about it in order to represent myself in court over some financial issues. But luckily, for me at least, I haven't had any direct experiences where it inhibited my scientific endeavors, except for the fact that there was a time back in the, 70s perhaps, when the government was still behind the idea of various types of scientific advancements, and there were considerable tax incentives allowed for people who made, or corporations who made, investments in technological innovations. But then as they got more and more greedy and more interested in pulling in the reins, all of that was stopped, and it was basically made very difficult to get R&D money for any worthwhile project. And yet it was amazing that in that same time period, you would see the most insane and ridiculous enterprises finding all manner of funding, but anything worthwhile was prevented from progressing. Mm-hmm. So indirectly, I have experienced some of the ramifications of these changes in the monetary system, but I've been lucky enough to have encountered various private individuals who were kind enough to fund my work over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to elaborate on some of those crazy programs that you had either seen or heard about. it might be interesting.
Well, I don't honestly remember too many of them, but I do know, for instance, that some of them were definitely done under the guise of being scientific, but if you really questioned their validity, it just blew the mind, you know. The one that comes to mind, only because it was so utterly ridiculous, was that there was an allotment of some $30 million or some extraordinary amount of money like that, which was allocated for the study of bovine flatulence.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that on another show. Yeah. But go ahead, for the new listeners.
I almost can never forget it because it was so absurd. I mean, if you just think about that, there was a point in time when we had literally millions upon millions of buffalo occupying the Central Plains states all the way from northern Texas, you know, to the Canadian border, there are literally tens of millions of those critters. And they all ate grass, and I'm sure they all produced large quantities of gas, just like any other herbivore. And it didn't destroy the world, and it didn't alter the environment, and it didn't do anything to the rest of the planet, because it's part of God's plan, and there it was. But after we killed off all the bison, except for the handful that's left now, some genius somewhere figured that, you know, domesticated cattle, small as they may be in number, could have this incredible effect upon our atmosphere and our ability to breathe. And the morons that okayed the research bill were just as crazy as the people who dreamt it up, in my opinion. You don't have to spend one nickel to know what the outcome of it is going to be.
Do you suppose that the word...
That's the kind of stuff that gets the money.
Yeah, yeah. Do you suppose the word bovine was code for political?
Well, I don't know, but I can tell you one thing. There's been an awful lot of absurd projects that I've heard about over the years. I should have kept a log of them, to be honest with you, but, you know, I had better things to do with my time. And it turns out that if you really investigate what happens, sometimes these ridiculous projects are put on the books deliberately because the money is actually used for something totally different. Lots of times they're black ops projects.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we know that. Anyway, I was trying to make a political stab there by saying that the word bovine could just be the cover story for political, as in political flatulence.
Oh, but, well, I missed that because I was too focused.
Okay. So these crazy projects get funded, and you have to know that they're not spending that kind of money on anything. How could you? What would you spend it on in that sense?
Even if you bought the latest computer equipment and the best printers and reams of paper and even hired a whole squadron of assistants, you couldn't possibly spend $30 million writing a report on bovine flatulence.
Oh, only our government could do that, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, listen, we shouldn't be too critical. After all, wasn't it the Pentagon that spent $700 for a hammer and $1,200 for toilet seats?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were. I think they had bought a number of. This was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Somebody stole some rather expensive. They ended up being expensive. These were run-of-the-mill toasters, okay, and I think they were to sell somewhere from $19.95 to $21. Let's say $21 at the high end. They were selling these toasters to the Pentagon for something like $1,864. And the reason for the expense was that they had titanium. In other words, these toasters were made to work on the battlefield. Now I ask you, what do you plug that toaster into on the battlefield?
Exactly.
In the desert.
Well, that's where the bovine flatulence comes in, you see. Because if your unit is issued a couple of cows, then, you know, you can use the methane gas to power a fuel cell and thereby produce electricity for your $1,864 toaster.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's incredible.
Yeah.
What an innovation.
Well, you know, this goes on. Now, I mentioned at the top of the hour this wonderful ebook. It's actually online. It's a short speech that talks about war and the profits that are made. And there's a lot of detail into the clothing, into the shoes, how many shoes they had left over. You're talking I think they bought 33 million pairs of shoes, and they ended up with 21 million pairs of shoes after the war was over. They still had all these extra shoes. Saddles, thousands of saddles for horses. They were going to ride the cavalry into town. And of course, those didn't get used. Somebody made a ton of money on them. And, you know, it's just one thing after another is described. But it's a really interesting article. It's become an article because it's been posted on the web, but it was a speech. And I don't know in front of whom the speech was delivered, but I do know that it was pretty heavy stuff to be telling anyone. And yet it resounds of the truth. You have no other explanation. This was a pretty experienced soldier, too. He had fought in a number of wars and had received a number of medals for his bravery. And he came out of the war seeing, really, that it's a racket, that it's about making money. And of course, today, it's so evident. When you read this post-World War II speech, you'll find that it's very prophetic. Or it's been going on like this forever. And somebody was right in the midst of it and saw it firsthand and decided it's important to tell the people what's going on. Certainly the media is not doing it. Well, I should mention in regard to that too, science is mentioned somewhat, but it's more about the repression of science. Just the normal ways to make money, huge sums of money. And I know that based on the amount of money that's been stolen, or embezzled, or just created on off-balance sheets, regardless of who it belongs to, because it's all illusion. There has been a lot of technology developed out of that money, and the debt assigned to us. That's the issue. The debt is always assigned to us. These people pay for nothing. We pay.
Yes. I agree with you, but here's the catch when it comes to that. That brings us back to the deeper understanding of the 13th Amendment, because with the U.S. being bankrupt, and I'm referring now to the corporation, what was done to remedy that issue was that all of the national assets were put into a trust, and then we, the people, were designated as sureties to that trust. Now, that means that we are somehow expected to support the debt of this bogus corporation. Well, it's amazing to me that that has never leaked out, or that the people who do know about it haven't complained, because supposing that was General Electric, or Westinghouse Corporation, or GM, and they turned around and said, well, you know, we're in financial trouble right now, but what we're going to do is we're essentially going to do whatever we can to fix the situation, and we're going to bill it to the people. Well, I think that you would see absolute pandemonium if that was made public knowledge, or if it in fact was executed in some recognizable form. But
that's exactly
what the gets.
I was going to say that's exactly what they did with this bailout.
Oh, I know. But yeah. You see, that's the point. They've gotten so brazen that now they don't even try to hide it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, originally, you know, it was covered up because they could get the money that they needed through inflationary means, through taxation and all these other things, because it was the so-called government that was making all of the arrangements in cahoots with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury. And nobody was any the wiser, because nobody understands how the government works anyway. But now they don't even try to do that. Now they just pass a new law and say, well, let the sheeple bear the burden.
Yeah, and that's the issue I talked about yesterday in terms of how it works. And yes, you're right. This trust is actually called an international implied irrevocable charitable trust, which means that we get benefits. We're not beneficiaries. We're not members of the trust. In fact, all of what they do is outside of the realm of our contractual liability. All of it. Every single piece of it, because you ask to get your portion of the profits that they're getting from all the theft and embezzlement. Are they going to give you a piece of it? Heck no. Instead, the idea is for us to pay into it. You see, they take what we do. And right now, their intention is to destroy the dollar, destroy the companies. I mean, you can see what they did. All the companies, all the huge employers have left the country. They're all gone. NAFTA and CAFTA.
What the amazing thing is that when they first conjured up this idea, they realized that if anybody ever figured it out, there'd be hell to pay for it. So they say, well, we have to have an escape mechanism that we can always say, well, it was right there, it's part of the law, and it's to take care of the public in case there is a problem with them being able to meet their financial obligations. So they actually created an entity which is called the Bureau of the Public Debt. And theoretically, and I believe it's I forget what town it's in, it might be like Fredericksburg, West Virginia, or someplace like that, but wherever it's located, their function is literally supposed to be that if you can't pay your bills, you can't meet your mortgage, you have no groceries this month, or whatever, you have the right to approach this entity to open an account with them, and they will give you a checking account, and you can literally pay your bills, supposedly at the government's expense. Well, of course, what's really happening is you're drawing down on your own credit line, just like they do. They draw down on our credit line. But the thing that's interesting is that in modern times, of course, they have that organization on the books, so that if they're ever discovered, they can always say, well, see, we prepared this for the people. It's right there. It's not our fault if they don't use it. But in reality, they didn't tell anybody about it. So, I mean, what good is it? Nowadays, it's been discovered that this entity exists, and I know people who have personally attempted to make use of the mechanism to see if it's valid. And what happens is pretty amazing. They tell you that you have to open a bank account and that you're going to use your Social Security number as the bank account number. And so you go ahead and you send in all the information to a local check preparing company, and they produce a book of checks for you with your Social Security number supposedly as the account number. But what they don't tell you is that the Social Security number, in order to be construed as a true Treasury account, can't have any hyphens in it. And yet, what they did was the Treasury Department downloads format instructions to the printing computers in these check-producing companies, and they have nothing to say about it. And so what they do is they allow you to buy the checks from the company. They allow you to go ahead and fill out a check, let's say to pay your rent or whatever. But when the check is produced, they put in hyphens. The check is printed with hyphens in there deliberately. And the company that prints them has nothing to say about it because their computers are directly controlled by a download from the Treasury Department. Well, what happens is the check gets honored initially, and then they come back and attack you for having used a bogus account. And they literally will close down all of your account, your personal accounts, and sue you for making use of this mechanism. And very few people understand that the secret instruction has been given to insert these hyphens in the account number. And that's what gives them license to screen bank fraud and to bring charges against you. So even though they theoretically have this backdoor arrangement that was supposed to be put in to protect the public and protect them from the ramifications of this scam being discovered, they're so damn cheap that they won't even let people participate in. At first, they don't tell them about the presence of this organization. And secondly, they take this extra added step of secretly inserting hyphens to destroy the validity of the account number. And then they allow the banks to prosecute you for passing a bogus check. Now, is that a government of the people, for the people, and by the people? I wonder.
Now, this is probably the DTCC who's doing that, right? The depository. Go ahead.
I'm not sure what those initials stand for.
That's the Depository Trust Corporation in New York that processes all the checks that go into the banks. It's a clearinghouse, but they funnel stocks over to Seed and Company. Everything gets its heyday at the DTCC in New York. Those are the actual people making the money. I mean, making the profits.
Well, imagine. I don't profess to have knowledge of the inner workings of the system, but I know for a fact that the anecdote I just related is a truism.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the DTCC that's doing that. Now, so basically they make this rule up front about no hyphens between the numbers. And yet they insert the hyphens. So what do they do to do that? Are they reproducing the check and altering the check?
No, it's even simpler than that. Let's say you go to a deluxe check company and you say to them that you want to have checks printed up with the banking organization being the Bureau of Public Debt. You're perfectly allowed to do that. It could be Joe Blow's banking system. They don't care. So they're just going to get paid for giving you the checks. So when you tell them what the account number is, they actually put that into their computer in the exact manner in which you give it to them. But I found out through my own investigations that their computer, which does the printing of the checks, has certain formats that are imposed upon it at will by the Treasury Department. They are allowed to download directly to each check company's computers certain details about the production of a check, and the printing company has nothing to say about it. So even though you would put in the proper account number there's a code that was downloaded that says to insert the hyphens, which prevents the number from being an account number and converts it into a Social Security number.
Yeah, I'm understanding that. So it's basically through the software that they're doing that then.
Right.
Okay. So the whole reason for making that rule in the beginning is so that they can break it and charge you with breaking it.
Yeah. As usual, they always talk out of both sides of their mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
The interesting thing is, in the case that I'm referring to, and of course I can't tell you the names that were involved, there was considerable amount of money that changed hands because they actually allowed this thing to go on for quite some time before they dropped the hammer. And so what actually happened was that the individual in question who wound up having to take legal action to protect himself, he said, well, that isn't the bank account number that I inserted. And there are no hyphens when I put this number in there. And so the check printing company checked their records, and they said, well, that's right. That's not the number he put in there. And so they investigated, and it was them who told us that the details of adding those hyphens was a download directly from the Treasury Department, which caused that change to go on record. And initially they said, well, don't worry, we'll print them for you the proper way, since that's what we contracted to do for you. But then when they tried to do that to get around it, the word came down on them that if they did that, all hell there would be hell to pay. And so they just recanted and said, well, we can't do it.
Now, did this come out in court, or?
No, it was never taken to court, but it came out as a result of a private investigation as to why the change was made on the checks.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy who I'm speaking of had the original a copy of the original order, and he didn't have any hyphens in his account code.
Well, what you're describing, Jim, is just more organized crime. That's all it is.
Well, see, that's actually the only thing the government knows. If you stop and think about it, think of one thing that they do that's honest, up and up, and for the benefit of humanity. There's nothing. And yet the interesting thing is they can't do anything else either. I mean, in the colonial period, anybody that went into public service and in an office of any importance, they had a job of their own. They were blacksmiths, they were farmers, they were gunsmiths, silversmiths, masons, carpenters, you know, whatever they were. There isn't one of those pinheads in Washington that can shoe a horse, that can do any serious carpentry work, that's a scientist, that's a chemist, that's a doctor. What can they do? They are literally the dregs of society, and yet they wind up on top. Well, you know, we used to have an old expression in Jersey about why they're on top, but it's too vulgar to say on the radio, but it happens to be true.
Well, there is Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul, actually. I mean, you know, there may be a few exceptions, but in general, I agree with you.
Yeah, but you notice that Ron Paul was never allowed to enjoy the same exposure as the other so-called candidates.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't given proper media time, and he certainly didn't get elected. So
yeah.
There's nothing fair about the system to begin with.
Well, that's obvious. I mean, they were just putting him out there to keep people occupied. you know, the thinking people were supporting Ron Paul. And while that was going on, there was a lot of corruption going on behind the scenes. They had to have that diversion. When people are talking about Ron Paul, they're not talking about Barack Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah.
Or his photos. You know. So, well, by the way, and I thought if I can change gears for a moment here, there's a piece that I wrote which is coming out in the Idaho Observer this month. It's just a short little introduction to a twist in my research path where I'm looking into the genealogical background of Cyrus Ingerson Schofield. Does that name ring a bell with you?
The name Schofield does, but I have to be honest with you, I don't know what the heck it's connected to.
Okay, well, in the article I describe him as the progenitor of dispensationalism and the rapture in Christian circles. He supposedly or allegedly actually authored this Schofield study Bible that sold 2 million copies like in the first couple of weeks it was out.
Oh, that's where I heard the name, the Schofield Bible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so my editors and publishers at the Idaho Observer asked me if I would do a little genealogical study. And I saw so many anomalies in what was posted on the genealogical sites, I decided that that's not the path to even follow. It's worth following to tell everyone how absurd everything sounds. Let me give you an example. Okay, your name is Jim. Now imagine your father's name is Elias, and then his father's name is Elisha. And both your grandfather and your father marry women by the name of Abigail. What do you think the odds of that are?
Well,
it's not impossible.
High.
Yeah, it would be pretty high. Okay. What do you think when neither Abigail has any parents?
That makes it even more suspicious because I could see one of them being an orphan or something, but both of them makes it approaching mm-hmm. the incredulous.
Yeah. And then you would think someone like that, I mean, it was just someone going overseas, so they came back and they registered with the INS at Ellis Island, and then they went about their business. Why would they lie about their age, or why would they lie about their, you know, their name? Why would Ellis Island actually obfuscate the passenger manifest? Why would they put a phony one up instead of the real one? And why is it
the only thing I can think of?
Go ahead.
I was going to say the only thing I can think of is if the government was trying to hide this person's true genealogy for some obscure purpose of their own. Because Ellis Island is a government run institution.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody fairly high up would have to authorize, you know, that departure from the norm in an institutional environment like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's see. We had a caller asking about a URL that I gave out yesterday. That is the URL off of the document. I'm just letting the listener know this. And also Seth, who sent me this message. I can't be responsible for how one enters a URL in their book, but I would say just Google the lawyer's secret oath. I'll try to I don't have that information in front of me right now, so looking for it would be a problem. So you have to wait for an update on another show. It's called The Lawyer's Secret Oath, however, and it's on my website. I've actually posted a link to it, so you should be able to find it. The issue now, tonight's topic is also a request. In other words, where can one go? Well, this, we're giving you a compilation of information. Now, when you say tonight's topic, we're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about war. We're talking about the Federal Reserve. We're talking about the Uniform Commercial Code. I don't think there's just one link that will give you all of that. Okay. Now we know that the caller used the wrong URL. Good. So it worked. Anyway. Regarding tonight's topic, well, if you want a specific answer, why don't you call in? We will take a call. Call in and let's get a conversation going here. It's much easier than to try to read between the lines. Well,
what did somebody do? Send an email?
They called in, I guess, spoke to Seth. I don't know if they wanted to come on the show, but they are welcome to come on the show. We're not going to bite anybody. At least I'm not.
Well,
the interesting
thing is, if they were responding to the organization that I spoke about,
mm-hmm.
You can actually look up the Bureau of the Public Debt, and they are a bona fide government agency, and they have a telephone number, and you're allowed to call them and ask them questions. And I think that everybody in the United States should call them.
Yeah, really, if they do that. Well, so to me, it sounds like this is an attempt at a cashless society. I mean, obviously, we have that with credit cards, and we have that with Federal Reserve notes, but this is now we've got Leo. I got interrupted here. Leo from Massachusetts is on the line. Is that you that called in before, Leo?
Right. He didn't quite get it exactly. The topic of yesterday, what was the URL you cited?
If you were listening to the show just now, I don't have that information in front of me, and it's a bit of a hassle.
Okay, I'm just saying that the URL you quoted is in those lawyers' secret oath things, but it's really inoperative. It's a URL that's being sold, so it has that standard setup, which
mm-hmm.
references other stuff. It doesn't have any real text going on in it.
Leo, I gave the URL that was on the document. That's the best I could do.
Anyway, tonight's the one I'm interested in tonight is. Is there a URL for his DTCC and this whole Social Security number hyphen thing?
Well,
that's what I was looking for.
That's two issues. Okay, Jim was just talking about that now. The Bureau of Public Debt, he said. You can Google that.
The proper name for it is the Bureau of the Public
Debt. The Public Debt, yes.
And that whole issue with the hyphens and or the lack of the hyphens or whatever, you'd have to understand exactly what they're there for in order to appreciate that function. Supposedly, if you are in trouble financially because of the government's antics and the depression, because this organization was put together years and years ago, and let's say you can't pay your bills, you theoretically can open an account with this bureau, and they give you checks. And you can write a check to pay your mortgage, to pay your grocery bills, you know, to buy a car, you know, whatever it is. And, of course, they didn't tell anybody that they created this organization, but it was there to protect their behinds because of the things that they were doing when they manufactured the terms of the 13th Amendment, because you have to realize that, or is it the 14th? I honestly am a little confused about that. But one of those two amendments, which basically is the one that vilifies slavery. But if you read between the lines, it does not condemn voluntary servitude. And so what happens when you subscribe to any benefit from the government, you literally sell yourself into servitude to the government ad infinitum. And that's then reinforced by every other adhesion contract that you sign, marriage license, mortgages, automobile license, hunting license. It doesn't matter what it is. Business license. Anything that has the word license associated with it then ties you to this, into this system as essentially a slave. And that's called voluntary servitude. And all of this stuff has been done secretly, and this other organization was only put there as eyewash. The mere fact that nobody was ever told about it and it was never intended for the public to use it demonstrates entirely the fact that it's a lot of rubbish. But interestingly enough, in recent times, with all the investigations that have been going on, this whole thing has surfaced. And so now people say, well, wait a minute, if that's what this is on the books for, let's try and use it. So they went ahead and actually applied for an account. And what they were told was, you use the digits of your Social Security number to establish the account for yourself with from which these funds should flow. But when they were actually issued the checks had hyphens which converted the account number back into a Social Security number, which then made it an invalid bank account number and allowed the legal arm of the banking system to come down on the individual for writing a fraudulent check. So that was the nature of that whole thing. But what I recommend is that anybody has an interest in that should actually contact the Bureau of the Public Debt, which has a registered phone number, and demand an explanation as to why they are there, how they're supposed to function, what they're supposed to do, and how do you participate in that activity. And I think after they get 250 million phone calls, it'll be a very interesting day.
Yes. Well, Leo, does that answer your question?
Well, I'm at the site right now, and I see public debt information related to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. Is that the correct link, or is which link do I go to find what you were talking about?
Well, I don't know that Jim.
You're
Jim
not
has
go
the
to link. Any link to find information about the Social Security number versus the account number, because that's something that was exposed in a in actual happening with people that I'm aware of. So I doubt very much you're going to find that on a website. But if you contact the Bureau of the Public Debt, and they do have a phone number somewhere in, I think it's in West Virginia someplace, they have an obligation to speak to you. And I've been told, I haven't done it myself, I'll be honest about that, but I have been told by reliable people that you can ask them all manner of questions, and they're obligated to answer. Of course, they may not be obligated to tell you the truth, but they are obligated to tell you something.
Yeah, well, Leo, hang on a second. They're not. What Jim is saying is they're not going to allude that this issue is going on with the hyphens being added to the number that you use as an account number. Now, normally, this is what's crazy about that. Normally, the bank issues the account number and gives that to the printer. So in this case, they're telling you to participate in this program that you submit the number, and this is how you use it, and then they alter it. So there's the fraud right there. Well, the first fraud is that that money is being given to you out of thin air. There's actually no exchange going on. It's all designed just to move in and take your property. Leo, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm looking at these. I'm on a IxQuick meta search, and I come up with a bunch of different pages. One is publictreasury.gov and Bureau of Public Debt, Wikipedia, Savings Bonds Online, Calculate the Value of Your Paper Bonds. I put in for my search Bureau of the Public Debt.
Okay, Leo, I don't mean to be rude, but we can't use the valuable time talking about Google links.
I was just trying to find, if I do get their address, what do I ask them for if I want to set up this kind of account? What is the name of the account?
You just ask them to explain to you what their function is and how you can participate in their function. But, the name itself, if you dig into it more deeply, will tell you the Bureau of the Public Debt. What is the public debt? That you have to understand how the whole thing works. Do some background research. Otherwise, when you go in there, if they find out that they realize from your questions that you don't know anything about it, they'll probably just give you a snow job. But the people that I knew who approached them went there well-informed and actually badgered them into giving them the proper information. But I think it's a very crucial issue. It's just one of many misleading situations that the government has engendered for bamboozling the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Leo, I hope that helps you. We got to move on.
Well,
Thanks for calling in. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Now, just for you listeners out there that are researching, and Leo is looking, so I'll credit him for that. It's not like we're walking around with a little black notebook filled with links in our pockets. Sometimes, if we do mention a link, and obviously when we print something, we do everything we can to lead you to the source of the information. When it's research related, you are kind of on your own. I mean, we can try to steer you, like Jim did, to look under certain keywords. The whole thing is to narrow down your search by using certain keywords that will eliminate the necessity to pour through a lot of meaningless stuff. Imagine you're looking for a particular song that has a name, like My Way. Okay, now if you put lyrics to songs in a search engine in Google, you'll spend a year before you'll figure out that you have to use the title My Way to get you to the lyrics. You might get lucky, and after 100 or more links, trying sorting through the ones that work and the ones that don't and the ones that give you error pages or the ones that are just park pages that someone has taken over. In other words, you're going to spend a lot of time wasting your time, so be more specific with the criteria that you use, using commas or quotes or plus signs in between keywords often facilitates a search. And, when we're mentioning a specific article or something, we can't always give you the link. That's not what we're thinking about. We're thinking about the material. And we want to encourage you to do some digging when you on your own. When you do the digging on your own, you're going to find that you become more resourceful, and that's what empowers us. And then you talk to your friends and show them things that you know, and pretty soon we have a whole bunch of people doing research and paying attention to what's going on. And when they do that, they start to wake up, too. So, you know, we do a lot of research to come up with the content that you're hearing on the show in a normal conversation. We're not reading scripts here at all, are we, Jim?
Absolutely not.
We've a few times we followed outlines because of the nature of some of the technical or scientific information that we were discussing. But even then, it's just a couple of words, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just enough to keep us on track so that we can succinctly deliver the information in a way that the listener can best digest it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And even us, sometimes. Sometimes we're talking about things that that haven't happened yet, or we're being creative in our thinking, and there isn't a script to follow. It's sometimes what comes out that way is much better than anything we could imagine with a script.
Oh, for sure. And not only that, but the other thing is that sometimes this stuff is so off the wall that the only reason why we have an outline is because it helps us to figure out the best way to present the material.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're not really using it as a crutch, per se. You know, I read a 16-page document on the show last night. I read it because it was pretty simple. It was to the point. It repeated itself many times, but that was this person's view of how this information should come forward. And there was it's heady stuff. But you see, when people in the listening audience hear this a few times, they start to grasp what's going on. These are things that you and I have looked at for a number of years and have had even actual encounters in our experience to know that these things go on, or that's the way it is. And we may not see all of the issues behind a conspiracy, but certainly we sense that there's a conspiracy, or we see the signs of a conspiracy. And when you're getting into things like theft and propaganda and the media's irresponsible way of paying attention to what's really going on, well, it's because it's a propaganda machine. It was never intended to be something which was a genuine source of higher knowledge or information. It was always something that degenerated as it went on. TV right now is so poor that if you were to, for one day, show some of the old programs from the 1950s or the 1960s, and then come back the next day to what they're showing today, people wouldn't watch TV anymore. At least not on the days that they're showing this stuff, but a lot of people don't know any better. They haven't seen anything different. And they're not even considering what it is they're looking at. It's like, well, this channel's got a lot of color on it. There seems to be some action. I'll just leave this on. Or I want to see something specific, and they go there, and it's sports, or it's a dance contest or a singing contest. Whatever happened to just presenting art? Why not give the fabulous solo artists that perform with symphony orchestras some airtime? Oh, that doesn't sell, or, you know, we would have difficulty selling advertising. Well, you don't have any problem showing Viagra commercials in the middle of the night on virtually every channel. Why don't you target that audience that uses Viagra and give them some classical music or give them some jazz or give them something alive instead of something pre-recorded, taped, and really just fabricated. It's not art anymore. None of this stuff is art. And those artists out there resent what the media does. Most of them can't stand it.
Yep. Well, not only that, but as long as you're advertising Viagra, if you have an erection that lasts for 4 hours, wouldn't you like to listen to some soothing music?
Well, if you have it for 4 hours, they say to go see your doctor. Now, you have to get past your partner there. Wait a minute. You're not going to the doctor now. I don't care if it's 4 hours. No, sir, not tonight.
But, you know, getting back to what you said earlier, which is so true, Don, I have a really, really vivid recollection of the early TV shows, especially the children's shows, because back in the 50s, I was pretty young. And, they had Children's Adventure Hour, and they would talk about expeditions in Africa and all kinds of fantastic discoveries, Easter Island, all these different things. They had the Ed Herlihy's Children's Hour, and they had, lots of adventure stories for kids. I remember Bamba the Elephant Boy, all these things that were really had substance to it. But now, if you look at what they have designed for children, it's unbelievable. How can we possibly get along without SpongeBob SquarePants, for instance? That's the kind of garbage that they're feeding our kids today. And all this useless cartoon drivel, it doesn't even measure up to a good animation. It's just nonsense. What about South Park? And what about, what's that other one there? That they have this nauseating
Beavis
family.
And Butthead.
There's another, all that kind of stuff. And you talk about degeneration. Man, not only is the quality of the program no good, but the material that's presented has no value for educating or instructing our kids.
And what have we
and
been saying?
You're not going to tell me that's not by design.
Yeah. Well, we've been saying how they've been dumbing down the kids, and that's just another aspect of it. They're dumbing them down even when they don't have school. And they do this to the whole public, obviously. Well, Jim, we're out of time. This was interesting tonight. We want to thank Leo for calling in. Be sure to call in again, Leo. Let us know if you found those links. We'd be interested, I'm sure. Right, Jim?
Oh, absolutely.
And if you get a copy of the archive, Leo, and listen to it again, Jim's giving you some instructions. Go back and listen to that. That's when it's really going to sink in and you're going to understand what he's talking about. It's just another aspect to organized crime. It would be interesting to see how much money they have available. I think that'd be the first question I would ask. If they're handing out free credit lines, what is the total volume of capital that they can hand out? If it's available to all the citizens in this country, it'd be interesting to see what their intention is with that.
Well, supposedly it's in the millions, so that would pique people's interest right there.
You mean for each person?
Yes, for each person. It's in the millions. But try and get any of it.
Yeah. More Federal Reserve notes, right?
Well, it's even less than that. It's a total intangible thing.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I want to wish you a great weekend, and I want to thank you for being on tonight's show. I look forward to next week's broadcast here on Evident Footprints. So you have yourself a great weekend.
Well, thank you, Don. You too. And I'll look forward to the next show also.
Okay. Take care. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Jim Murray. Jim will be back with us again next Friday. In the meantime, special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Leo for calling in, and also Kathy Cook. Kathy, I don't know why you don't call in and talk to us. Kathy left us a little message, though. She liked the banter between the three of us. So, special thanks to you, the listening audience, for tuning in, and I want to wish you all not just a great weekend, but a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.